You're listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK. Today's podcast is about consumer insight. We live in an age where the old saying, knowledge is power, has never rung so true. That knowledge comes from data, and that data is being collected all the time, whether you're aware of it or not. Our online purchases, store loyalty cards, and general spending habits are ripe for analysts to harvest. I'm John Bates, and in a few moments, I will introduce two AHDB analysts, and they're going to tell us what we can learn from the data and why it's so highly prized by the marketing and retail people. But first, let me tell you about the Consumer Insight Conference, which has been taking place in Warwick. 150 delegates packed a conference venue to hear from a range of speakers about changing diets and eating habits, the so-called shopper journey, and how retailers need to adapt to attract shoppers of the future. There was lively debate, and my two guests were there. Steve Evans, AHDB's Consumer Insight Manager, and Susie Stannard, a senior analyst. Steve, you first. Why the conference?
It was a great opportunity for us to shout really hard about the work that AHDB's Consumer Insight team actively been looking at over the last year. We wanted to shout out to the industry and make sure that the key consumer trends were communicated out. We use it a great deal internally at AHDB, but we wanted to make sure that the industry was at the forefront and understood some of the key changes that we're seeing from the consumer landscape. It gave us a great opportunity to showcase some of our key data partners as well. So we had speakers from Kantar World Panel and IGD, fundamentally picking out the key consumer trends. We know that there's a challenging environment out there, and it's vital that we meet the needs of modern consumers. And for our sector categories, it's all about how quickly you can adapt and evolve with the consumer that will probably fundamentally lead to long-term success.
So there were retailers in the audience, and who else? What other sort of organisations?
Yeah, so a real mixture, which is probably reflective of the type of work we have to do. So we had retailer and processors that are involved in the buying of products that go to supermarkets, but we also had representatives there from the beginning stage of the supply chain with farmers. Whilst they might not have that direct contact with the consumer directly, it was great to have an opportunity out to farmers to really communicate how a joined up supply chain can actually benefit in the long run.
So the idea is to give people some understanding about what's happening with the supply chain and what's happening around consumer purchasing. So the idea is to give people the opportunity to listen to how consumer behaviour is changing, and people from across the retail organisations as well as people who are supplying. So the consumer landscape is changing, and Susie, you've done a piece of work around that. That's known as the Trust Report. Tell us about that.
The idea behind this really was, if you look at the total political landscape at the moment, people are very unsure. They hear a lot of things, a lot of information from politicians, which they don't necessarily trust. They can go on the internet. They hear a lot of scare stories about food and how it's produced and about agriculture. You know, they might see videos and exposés, which aren't necessarily very nice. But on the other hand, they hear from supermarkets about how different food is produced. And actually, we wanted to try and navigate that and to understand. We hear a lot from, say, the vegan lobby, who shout very hard about certain issues, but we don't hear very much about ordinary people, so ordinary men and women. So what we wanted to do is almost take a baseline of information. What do people understand about agriculture? How do they feel about it? What do they trust when they think about the food supply chain?
So how many people did you talk to?
It was a qualitative and quantitative approach. So we did some focus groups with consumers, so with small groups of consumers, and we did some work online with them. So it had a real kind of in-depth conversation. And then apart from that, we did a broader scale piece looking at around 2,000 consumers to see what they thought.
And were the results encouraging?
The results were very encouraging, actually. One of the key things we found was that actually most consumers felt pretty positive about agriculture, despite all of the negative press that we might hear. And one of the really nice things that came out was that farmers themselves were really kind of the key to building trust within the supply chain. They were the most trusted group. So we looked across farmers, we looked across retailers, kind of government agencies, food standards agencies, and farms came out as the key group. And the reason for that was that they were felt to have expertise in what they do, that they were caring, particularly in terms of looking after their animals, but also looking after the people that they work with.
That's really good news, and probably one of those sort of takeaway points from these podcasts is that the farmer is trusted, and so we would encourage farmers obviously to talk to shoppers and consumers at every opportunity. Steve, let me just come back to you about what's driving shopper behaviour and what people are buying. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, from our research that we take, we look at it in a very much a long-term fashion as well, because I think it's important to take that step back from your direct category involvement. So we've seen a long-term rise in the number of one and two person households over the last 30 to 40 years. It's not growing at the same fast rate that it was back in the 70s and 80s, but that is actually putting a bit of time now for retail to catch up and really thinking about the pack size. We've got a lot of literature out there around reducing wastage and how important that is for the consumer. But essentially, the consumers now are facing lots of time pressures in their lives. There's a lot of desire to cook quick and easy meals, and making that distinction between quick and easy. So it doesn't always need to be the speed of the prep time, but also the easy signposting for consumers that they know how to cook the product. We're also seeing a change in terms of the typical meals people are eating. So there's a long-term movement away from kind of the meat and two veg traditional meals. So the roast occasion is probably the best example. That has a knock-on effect not only for the red meat sectors that AHDB represents, in the fact that it's seen a big impact on the sales of roasting joints declining, but also has a wider impact for, say, for instance, potatoes eaten at the roast occasion. And what we're seeing is a rise of dish-based cuisine. By that I mean more ethnic cuisines like Italian, Indian, etc., where often the name or the meat that's used in that product isn't always directly referenced. And what we're actually seeing is that red meat is underperforming significantly in these kind of categories. So we see this as a critical opportunity. Consumer often won't necessarily go to hand for red meat in these types of dishes, and we're seeing chicken perform really strongly in this category. So there's probably an educational side of things, but also a communication side with consumers about how they can use maybe different cuts that they might be used to in some of these rising popularity in dishes.
Okay, Susie, there's also huge investment that's going on in companies and then in the development of plant-based meals. Does that mean there's a genuine move towards eating less meat?
Yes and no. I think to some extent, if you look at total meat, so if by meat we include chicken, we include fish, actually there's slight growth in demand for protein overall. Consumers really do want to eat more protein in their diets for health reasons. There has been some reduction in red meat, but it's minimal, I would say. But there is more consumer interest in some of these new plant-based products. It's not necessarily a complete exclusion thing, so very few people are actually adopting fully vegan lifestyles. I think it's less than 1%. But more people are trying to maybe cut out some of the time and supplement their regular red meat diets with something that's plant-based, maybe 1 or 2 days a week.
So it's a kind of quality quantity sort of message, and maintaining a balanced diet in which meat does feature.
Absolutely, and in the conference we talked about that, and where there are opportunities for processors and farmers, but particularly with consumers who are perhaps looking to consume a bit less meat, but when they do eat meat, they want the meat that they consume to be better quality. And we've definitely seen some growth in those areas.
So both of you really, I'm sort of wondering about the overall trends and really what we're getting from data. Is that encouraging? Is that good news? Or for traditional farmers and meat eaters and so on, are we seeing a longer term decline, or should we be content that we're maintaining our position?
I think for me, it's from a consumer perspective, highlighting and looking at their buying behaviour can highlight great opportunity, and it might be one that doesn't necessarily come at the forefront when you sort of look at news headlines. So if you took the sort of vegan plant-based discussion point we were just having there, so 86% of plant-based meals are actually eaten by non-vegans. So it is very much around sort of just reducing that meat consumption slightly, but it doesn't necessarily have to be all or nothing. It's not like it has to be that people are stopping to eat, but it's then important through our consumer research, we look at, well, why people are eating less meat. And health is actually one of the highest ones on there as well. So it can also highlight some of the challenges in the industry, but it also can give you a good opportunity. So we think there's a great opportunity, for instance, for red meat to shout harder about the health credentials it holds and communicate that to consumers so that it offsets some of the concerns people might have. And really, if we are facing a time where consumers are contemplating or considering eating less meat, we need to be at the forefront there to telling them or giving them strong reasons why they can eat red meat.
There's also a lot of talk about environmental issues and the damage or not that is caused by farming. Does that come through in this sort of data analysis?
The environment piece was something that we looked at when we did the work on trust, and it's definitely top of mind for consumers. So we found that environmental concerns were as high a concern for consumers as Brexit is at the moment, and considering the amount of headspace that takes up, it's perhaps not surprising. But actually the biggest environmental concern for consumers is plastic. We've seen with all the press around David Attenborough and his Blue Planet programme and the devastating consequences of plastic pollution in our environment, that it's really something that consumers are increasingly concerned about, and it's also one of the things that they feel that they personally are a bit more able to do something about. So 56% of consumers feel that they've changed their behaviour, so whether that's recycling or whether that's actively trying to cut down on the amount of plastic packaging that they're using. So that's quite interesting, and there's a number of things that we can look at doing throughout the supply chain and how meat is packaged and how our other sector products are packaged, and I think that's something that would encourage the supply chain to look at more.
One of the things we look at with the consumer research is how we take some of these quite large issues, but also we look very closely about how it translates to an actual shopping behaviour in store. So what we do find is like how you essentially need to look at these kind of things in tandem, and also not forget some of the key purchase drivers behind some of the products. So the work that we presented at the conference looked at the meat shopper journey and very much looked at what consumers say and what they do at fixture. And what that was a great piece of research to actually highlight some of the differences between some of the things that cut through probably stronger in store. So we know, if you take the example on meat, that we know price and taste are key purchase drivers. And when you look at it in store, there's other categories such as like how you cook it, the appearance of the product, that actually gains more importance when you're in store. Whereas some of the environmental welfare quality standards are important when they're removed from the store, but when they're in store, they're not as hard in terms of that conversion thing. So it's not to say they're not important, but it's important to look at it in context. And I think it's important to be almost looking at both sort of consideration when they're removed from the environment, but also how you convert the shopper when they're in store. And so that piece of research was kind of aimed at sort of answering and providing insight and opportunity for the industry there.
So did the research look at provenance at all, or the importance of quality assurance schemes such as Red Tractor? Did those things come through?
It came through, but not as the top drivers. And I think a lot of the message and communication that we put out to the industry is around that kind of role of going beyond just the country of origin, saying more about the attributes of the product, the quality, the benefits, the health benefits, the production that's gone into that item, rather than just a functional thing of what country it's from. It's really cutting through to consumers to give them that extra motivation and reason to buy.
One of the things that we found when speaking to consumers was that there was a real demand for clearer labelling. So at the moment, when you look at a pack of meat or another product, it's quite confusing. You know, it can have provenance on there, it can have whether it's free range, not free range, it can have Red Tractor, it can be RSPCA, it can have lots of different, you know, the tier, whether it's premium or value or standard. And so consumers will find this process quite confusing. So I think there's a real opportunity for us as an industry for us to look at that and to see how we can make consumer choices as clear and as easy to understand as possible.
Okay, well, the work goes on. If our listeners want to find out more about Consumer Insight or want to look at the report, is that available online, Susie?
Absolutely. So if people want to go onto the AHDB website, we've got a Consumer Insight area. There's also a link on there to sign up to our newsletter. So we send that out every couple of months, and that will be jam-packed with lots of insights in this area. And as new things hit the news, then we cover those as well.
So if you want more information about AHDB, visit ahdb.org.uk. Thank you to my guests, Susie and Steve, and my producers, Jenny Waddington and Eleanor Holdsworth. I'm John Bates. Thank you for listening.